Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, busy 4 o'clock hour. Mark Cabali, Mike Florio going to join us in just a few minutes. So the biggest football topic of the day with Donnie Football, the Donnie Football Debrief brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience, is happening right now. And in for Donnie is our Friday producer extraordinaire, gorgeous Charlie Borges, diehard Bucks fan, who is very concerned about the Michael Penix, Drake London, Bijan Robinson.
Kyle Pitts just getting taken out of that equation now?
He's got to win people back over. As a guy that for years, fantasy football players said, ooh, this is my guy. I'm going to circle Kyle Pitts. I don't need to
He was supposed to
Travis
be Brock
Kelce.
Bowers, except he never was.
I'm going to get Kyle Pitts. And then Arthur Smith, according to many Falcons fans, ruined Kyle Pitts. But we don't really need to relitigate that. Instead, here is Charlie's biggest football story of the day.
The Debrief, 9/5/2025. So last night, obviously, there was the lightning delay in the Eagles and Cowboys game. Number one, I think the Thursday night game should start at 7 or 7:30, not 8:30. And even without the lightning delay, we probably would have haven't gotten in bed until at least midnight 30.
Did you know the Cleveland Indians had a pitcher in the 19-teens who was struck by lightning? They delayed the game for a couple hours and
he came back
and pitched and won the game.
Really?
Yes. You didn't know that?
I bet his stuff was electric after he came back.
Different times.
So in the lightning delay, I went on YouTube just to watch some things, just to pass the time, and a 3-hour long compilation of pick sixes came up. And I watched about an hour and a half of it. And that got me to thinking.
You watched an hour and a half of pick sixes?
Is this just
correct?
Okay. As someone that will also go to YouTube and watch things, are you hijacking the Debrief and turning it into, let me explain to you how sad my life is right now?
Because I think he's got a point here, but he's off to an interesting start.
It's more of a trivia question for you guys.
Okay.
That's how turning it into.
Okay. Then if you had said
from the beginning, hey, this is a trivia question, but I need to set it up for you.
No, I like the backstory. That's good radio. That's good work. What do you got here? What's the trivia question?
Who has thrown the most pick sixes in a single season in Pittsburgh Steelers history?
Ooh.
Man, my temptation.
My temptation's to say Ben Roethlisberger.
So I had two thoughts go through my head automatically. One was Bradshaw threw a lot of picks. Because that just different era.
Yep.
I also feel, though, that it was harder to get pick sixes back then because you'd get one, you'd get an interception, and then somebody from the offense would come in and like do a clothesline from hell on you.
Correct.
I just go with gut here.
Tommy
and say
Maddox.
2006 Ben Roethlisberger.
Tommy Maddox. Is this a single season or career?
Single season.
I will go with 2003
Tommy Maddox.
You are both wrong. Heath only threw three. The person who has the record for the Steelers threw five.
And? Who is it?
Any second guesses?
1991 Bubby Brister.
You're getting closer.
Really? I feel like, I mean, you could say 1995 Neil O'Donnell. It felt like he threw about 15 of them in the Super Bowl.
Do those count?
No, regular season.
1996, Mike Tomczak.
Nope.
All right, I give up. Uncle.
1985, David Woodley. Threw
five pick sixes.
Do you know, or can you name the five players in Steelers history that have had more than two pick sixes or more?
In their careers as corners.
In their careers. Or in the year, in the 1 year.
Willie Gay?
He has the most with three in one single season.
I feel like Rod Woodson would have had to have done it.
He had two in 1994.
Look at us.
Three more since 1980 who have more than one pick six in a single season.
Spillane didn't have two the year that he picked Jackson, did he?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we got to get to Florio so I can't guess these. Who are they quickly?
Sam Washington in 84, Dwayne Washington in 98.
George Washington in 1776.
And a gentleman by the name of Chad Scott in 2001.
He only gave up about 10 touchdowns to get him.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Hypothetically, Pony,
yes.
You know, we always talk about like new stadiums and how they get more expensive. If you tried to build a stadium in New York City proper, one of the five boroughs for both teams.
The Jets wanted to.
How much money would that cost now? Like $5 or $6 billion?
They had
bucks?
It ready to go, and one guy voted it down. It came down to one dude, and he said no.
The power of one vote.
And the scuttlebutt, not to get in the weeds here, was that the Knicks and Rangers owner, Dolan, was like the guy behind the scenes who
pressuring
put the kibosh on it.
Because he wants Madison Square and that whole like kind of thing to himself.
But the Jets wanted their own stadium in the city, and the Giants were going to stay
in East Rutherford?
Yeah, where the Meadowlands and Giant Stadium was back in the day.
James Dolan, the lead singer of JD and the Straight Shot band? That guy? That man?
We are going to hear from Cam Hayward because these clips have gone viral. He broke a 24-day silence today. Practiced, listed as a full participant on the Steelers injury report. So yesterday really was a veteran day off thing. But some of the clips that have kind of squeaked out here and come out that have come out here have not really made this look like a situation where Steelers fans' concerns have been put to bed for Sunday. So let's hear from the man himself, Cam Hayward, with Richie Walsh and others just a few minutes ago.
Cam, you going to play on Sunday?
No, I'm preparing. You know, still got some time, but we'll see.
You optimistic things will get worked out here in the next couple days?
I wish I could be more optimistic, but you know, just trying to stay in the moment. And, like, you know, I don't have all the answers. So, you know, it's more of just me just waiting and seeing what can happen.
This has been a frustrating process for you.
I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. You know, I thought this could be a lot easier, but it's gotten dragged on. And, you know, luckily it hasn't affected my teammates. But, you know, it's part of the game.
You weren't. Have there been any actual talks?
There has. You know, I can't really divulge what's going on, but, you know, there's been communication on both sides, and we'll see what happens.
Do you feel like if something were not to get worked out by Sunday, that maybe it could in the future? You know what I mean? Is that something that you've considered?
You know, just going off a precedent, it's never been something where they like to touch contracts in season. And, you know, that's a assumption I've always gone off. If something's different, you know, so be it. But I don't make those calls.
You were going to say something, Mulsey?
Yeah, there's just a little Easter egg, maybe. I mean, you and I try to become pros at reading between the lines and finding maybe a hidden, not agendas, but like a hidden telltale clue. When he said, luckily it hasn't affected my teammates yet, kind of makes me think he's not going to carry this out to the nuclear option. Not just, there's a lot of other reasons. Nick Faribault gave us a good summation of why it would be kind of messed up for him to start sitting games.
Because he cares about them so much and doesn't
because
want their season impacted.
Because on some level there is a genuine, I don't want to be that guy.
I think that's right. I also hear, in his voice that this has taken a toll on him big time.
I have a theory on that too. If you'll allow.
Okay.
I think he just says, I thought it would be a quicker process. I really believe this is how he felt like it would go. I had a first team all pro year. I was awesome. The Steelers love me and I love them. I only want to play for them. I'm the Walter Payton man of the year. This is going to be very simple. I go to them quietly. They front me this amount of money, not all of it, but some of it. We say, thanks. This was great. We love working with you. You love working with us. I go and have another baller year, and then we readdress it maybe with a new contract because I'm the Tom Brady of defensive linemen. Seriously, I think that's how he thought it would go.
And I think he felt that way.
He felt surprised.
Even when he showed up at training camp, he wasn't freaking out yet, and he thought it would happen shortly
after. Maybe they were just dragging their feet. They didn't feel like it was urgent, but it was going to happen. And I think he's been blindsided at least a little bit by the fact that they have kind of said, no, even business with you is business as usual for us.
His agent and Cam clearly think that they only have 48 hours to get this done. You just heard it in that last answer. He doesn't think this is something that they would take into the season, that they would not make an exception for him or
he said they
amend
don't touch
their policy.
Contracts. Yeah, he said they don't touch them. Like, we all thought, like, well, this isn't writing up a new contract. It's moving money. But I think he went broad-based there and said they just won't touch anything that has to do with the deal.
Cam, you weren't practicing for a little bit. You were kind of having a hold-in during training camp, return mm-hmm. to practice. What was kind of the thought process in returning to practice, participating in all of that?
It's not like I wasn't just not doing anything. There was me on the sideline, still staying ready. Some of it was by design because Mike T was trying to keep me out of periods. But, as we got closer, I still have to be ready for the season. Whether I'm on the field or not, I like to make sure I'm well prepared. We do have something.
Last time you talked to us, you said you told them kind of at the table last time you're going to come back and be an mm-hmm. all-pro. Did you have an opportunity to put incentives into that deal? Or no?
No.
Is that part of the frustration related to this?
Not a lot of players have gotten incentives over here. A lot of it is stemmed from just quarterbacks. There's different ways to handle the situation. I'm all for proving it. I'm not running away from it. My career has always been about proving it, and it was that route. I'd go for it, but got time. See what happens.
That is one thing that I think he's gotten, and his agent especially, have gotten hammered on. That I do think he's telling the truth on. When he came out and told his story at training camp, and tried to describe what went on, there were a lot of people, and I would put myself in this category too, who said, why didn't the agent just put something about the all-pro season into the contract that didn't trigger a renegotiation, but actually like gave him money? Okay, if I have an all-pro season, will you pay me an extra $5 million?
You give me this.
And I agree with this. I think he asked for it and they said no. And when they said no, their response was, okay, well, we're going to go have that season anyway. Mm-hmm. And then just to let you know, we don't want to play on this contract.
Honestly, what I would have said though is if they said no to that and you felt pretty strongly about it, then you just play the deal. You say, you know what, let's back away from the table, and if we'll just talk next year. If you even want to talk. If I have a bad year, you're not going to want to talk. If I have a great year, you might not want to talk because you might not want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that was a consideration. I think Hayward probably thought, if I have a long-term deal, even if the years aren't guaranteed, it'll give me some peace of mind and stability, and I'll play better because of it. Even if it's not the deal I like, just knowing that I have more years on it and I'm not like totally singing for myself. I can't believe I'm going to project myself onto him though, but I think that might have been like a psychological aspect to not just playing out the year. Like nerves associated with, oh man, I've got no safety net now. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a good year, I'm done.
I just want this in the back pocket.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
No, I think that's been the case from the start, and there is some signer's regret here on his part.
Is it as simple as something needs to be done before Sunday, whether you play or not, or are there other decisions you have to make or other factors, or is it pretty much, this gets done, I'm playing, if it doesn't, I'm not?
I wish I had a straight answer for you right now. All I can tell you is I've had to have a lot of tough conversations with my family.
Knowing that they don't negotiate touch contracts in season, nothing gets done on Sunday, does that affect your participation or your availability the rest of the season if nothing happens?
I don't want to have to think about that. I'd like to think cooler heads prevail and we move forward. But if it does get to that, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
What gives you confidence, Cam, that this wasn't a distraction?
Because everybody's gone about their business. I've still interacted with every guy on this team the way I usually do. I've tried to prepare the other guys that play next to me or play behind me that if there's opportunity, they'll be ready.
Faribault, when he was on with us last hour, said he thought if Hayward sat out Sunday's game, it would actually turn him into persona non grata in that locker room, and that he would have a hard time fighting back and getting like credibility and respectability back with those people.
Mm-hmm.
And to this point, he isn't fighting that battle yet, because I think he has a lot of like empathetic figures, including Watt, especially in that locker room. Mm-hmm. On defense, I don't know about the offense. Rodgers and Metcalf, I thought, were a little weird with him on the podcast, but that might just be like Rodgers' personality. It is something that I hadn't thought about until Nick brought it up. Would he risk alienating them and losing them? And is that part of this like difficult conversation game he's playing? Because we did see this with Le'Veon Bell. Like, everybody thought the Bell thing, the conversation sounded until we got to this point. What year was that? 2018?
Yes, 2018.
Everybody was saying, it'll get done. And then it didn't.
And then like everything turned on a dime.
Yes. And it, like, not just with fans.
F this guy from his teammates. Right. The O-lineman said
right.
stuff.
Right. So would it be similar? Like everyone's
I do think there would be
tacitly, quietly in Cam's corner right now, letting him handle his business, but all of a sudden as a captain, if he's not there.
Yeah, I think that it would be similar. I think it would be similar. And you might say, well, was Bell coming off a great season? Yes.
Yes.
Like the only difference between the two is obviously Cam, as I think, conducted himself as a Steeler on and off the field like better than Bell did. Well, maybe not better on the field. At Bell's best, he was spectacular, but off the field for sure. And I still just don't think that would get him very far. What's the old saying? A Walter Payton Man of the Year award and $1.70 will get you a coffee and a bagel or whatever. Like, I just don't think that carries much water or weight with his teammates even at that point. Definitely not with the fans.
Difficult of a decision because you are such a team guy. We all know you to be that person.
Yeah. Definitely out of my comfort zone. I'd rather not be talking about this, focusing on the Jets and, not having, a million things run through my head. But I said it earlier to somebody, heavy is a head that wears a crown. And, it's not me, being boastful, but if I'm willing to talk about it, I got to be willing to deal with it, that. And I'm not running away from it.
Have you been surprised at all about the public reaction to your situation, Cam?
There's loud voices and, everybody has an opinion. But I can't control that. If you know how I work, you know how I play, that's all that matters. I have to make a decision for my family. This is a business. I cannot play this game forever. Just like I'm maximized on the field, I want to be maximized outside of it, and I want to be taken care of that way. It's not being greedy. It's just the way this game is.
Stop it real quick.
Not for long. NFL. So I would tell every guy, maximize your opportunities keep going from there.
All right. There's two things, and I am on his side ultimately. I think he deserves more money. And mm-hmm. I think if he does not put the part in about, I've got to make the right decision for me and my family, I think just being very blunt and saying I try to maximize what I do for the team on the field.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to maximize it off the field, and I would tell any guy that. I'd be like, hell yeah, great advice.
Uh-huh.
I do think this is where the scales of money that we are talking about does warp a statement like, I've got to watch out for my family. Like, I've got to make the best decision. He has made 9 figures in his career. I don't care how much of that goes to taxes.
Mm-hmm.
He has made a lot of money. And so even though I support absolutely the principle of you give max effort on the field, you expect max compensation that you can realistically get off of it. When you are talking to, and he knows this, rank and file fans who make maybe $60,000 a year or whatever.
Yep.
Right? Who are clipping coupons, doing things a lot of people do. That part about it is going to fall on deaf ears whether he wants it to or not.
Yeah, I think they're going to take it the way that you just said it. I think what he meant by that is not like, I got to set my family up.
He meant it in principle, not in literal terms, in that sense.
What I think he meant was, I play a pretty dangerous sport for a living.
True.
And setting my family up means, like, am I willing to sacrifice my body and what could happen to it for another year at this price? And he's having a hard time reconciling that. I mean, that's, I've talked to so many guys. I mean, heck, I do a podcast with Patrick Peterson, who I think would fall into this bucket. Guys get to a point when they're in their 30s where they've made a lot of money and they're set. And can they justify playing a violent sport for money that they're accustomed to making a lot more than?
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, that probably is exactly what happened with him this week.
Well, I don't think there's any probably about it. I can't imagine what else it would be. If he was getting paid, if somebody said, you're still a $20 million player, he's probably playing right now. He took an incentive-laden small deal.
Same thing with Robert Woods. He's probably like, I'm not used to making what practice squad guys make. It's not worth it for me anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And, like, Aaron Donald made that decision, but he made it in a way that everyone was cool with. He let everybody know in advance that it was probably going to happen, and then he walked away because he was financially set and his legacy was set. Other guys, it's been more complicated. Andrew Luck's an example of that. Andrew Luck just got to a point where he said, you know what? Like, I don't want to
rehabbing from all these injuries and doing all this. I don't need it. I don't want it anymore. And the timing ended up being the thing that was way different.
Man, everyone will point to TJ Watt and say, that dude went out there after a hold-in and killed the Bills and was the Steelers' best player. And Mike Tomlin called him an alien afterwards. If Hayward does not get more money and plays, I don't expect him to play well at all. Because
you can hear how much it distracts it. I think it hurts him. I think it hurts him that the team that he probably feels like, maybe I have a slightly different relationship. I've been here for so long. We've been through a lot together, me and the team. I think he probably feels like, come on, they'd be a little different towards me. And if he realizes on some level, nah, like, I'm just another guy ultimately at the end, no matter how good I've been, I think that would hurt him.
His head's not in the right place with this. Clearly, or right place in air, like, meaning it's Friday. You should be thinking about the team you're going to play and doing everything you can to get ready for them. He's practicing because he needs to keep his body in shape. His mind doesn't sound like it's where it needs to be.
The only way that it goes the other direction is if he doesn't get it and he is just like, I'm going to rage out and be Incredible Hulk guy on the field. But, like, you know what though? You know what my brain would tell me real quick? If I rage out and play phenomenally well with no new money, all I'm really doing is helping the people, the owner,
that I'm ticked
who didn't
off at.
Want to give me any more money.
Yep. You said you've had your interactions the same with teammates. Did you address it openly? Does somebody ask you anything? Or is it just you don't have to agree with them?
I've addressed it openly with my teammates. I never wanted it to be a distraction or them to think otherwise. You know, if they've had a question, they've been able to contact me. And, you know, we've had, you know, formal talks about it. But, every teammate in here knows how I feel.
What's been the most difficult part of this entire process for you?
Honestly, the most difficult part, I think, like, less about me and more about, like my brother. Like, the dude has nothing to deal with this situation and has gone about his business the right way, but he just gets dragged along, and I'm a big boy. I can handle what comes my way. But when people start questioning what he does on the field, there's a brother in me, there's a teammate in me, and that's, you know, not anything he should have to answer for. I'm all for taking whatever heat I get for it, but, it's... I just think it's unwarranted to someone who has no control over a situation.
I agree with him on that. I think that's probably his best answer so far, because that is BS. I mean, look at what Aaron Rodgers has said about Connor Hayward in training camp in the preseason. He's raved about the guy. Now, maybe it's a little bit of sunshine and rainbows. Got quarterbacks do that with receivers and tight ends and build them up this time of year. But I don't think he's on the roster just because he's Cam Hayward's brother. I'm not saying he's any great player or anything like that, but based on where they picked him, sixth round, the amount of money he's making, not much, and what he does on special teams, he's legitimately earned his spot on the team. he's not here to just, you know, be the guy's caddy and friend and get him coffee and donuts when he wants. Like, he's an NFL player.
He's 10 years younger than Cam. Cam probably has a lot more in common with older veterans on the team than he does with his own brother. Like, as far as, I mean, I know he's his brother, you know what I mean, but like.
But it has gotten so ugly where people just say cut his brother to piss him off.
So that part bothers me mainly because, like, I get that making the kind of money these guys make, a certain amount of, like, ugliness, whether, you know, you think it's warranted or not, and I don't, just does come with the territory. But man, like, some of the people saying that or like really going after his brother personally, it's a lot of internet muscles there, I think. And it's a lot of, would you actually say this stuff anywhere near the guy to his face? And you wouldn't. And I think that always struck me as very weak. It's just people pot-shotting his brother because there's no repercussions to actually doing it.
Cam, beyond just money, how much of this is just about the respect that comes with being one of the top paid players in the position?
I think it comes to that. When you look at the situation, it's a unique situation. A lot of guys don't play late through the 30s, especially at my position. And then you look at what happened these last 2 years. I was hurt the 1 year, came back and gutted it out. Did I have my best performance? No. And through that, there was a motivation there to, you know, try to get something done. But all was hammered to me was, I'm damaged goods. And I used that as motivation, and I had one of my more productive years. And, you know, there's not anything guaranteed in my contract. They could cut me now, and, you know, they could have cut me right after the season, and it wouldn't affect them. So there's give and take on that. And this is a business. Like, if I can't talk openly about it, and I had to, you know, work through this with myself, and I know I haven't been as forward about this stuff because I've just been trying to work through answers and questions, but, you know, it's something that I've had to think about.
Last two for Cam.
Your relationship with the organization, be it Art, Omar, whoever it is, is that strained now? Is it going forward? Are you worried about that? Is it just business, and eventually it'll be go back to old or what?
I have a lot of respect for the Steelers and the organization. They got to run a business too, and they have to protect themselves. They have to do everything possible. But I like to think my track record speaks for itself. When I'm out there, I represent this team. When I'm off the field, I represent this team. I just hope it doesn't put a strain on it.
Do you feel like you're the normal amount of prepared that you would be going into a week one at this point?
You know, I've studied enough film. Nowadays, it's more or less what a team has done in the past is more what they're going to do to me. But I'm always prepared for every outcome.
I think his body's ready. I do not hear a guy that is emotionally or mentally ready to play on Sunday. If he's out there with no contract, I would be stunned if he like delivers a vintage Cam Hayward performance.
Yeah, I would be too at this point. I mean, then again, he's made a pretty nice career in his 30s about out of being doubted and then exceeding expectations, but I do think this is pretty different.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Mike Florio was in Philly last night, saw a man spit on another man, saw George Pickens use a wrestling move to take down an eagle in the red zone, saw a lot of thunder and lightning, and ultimately watched another Eagles win as they beat the Cowboys 24-20. Sunday night, a game that Steelers fans will want to tune in for, and that's the Ravens and Bills up in Buffalo. All right, Mike, I'm sure you're abreast of things, including the latest from Cam Hayward, practiced, but again, was saying things afterwards like, I've got a million things in my head right now. Frustrated with the situation, still won't commit to playing, thinks that he's been disrespected, thinks his brother has been mistreated now by Steelers fans. Your take on where things are at and what might happen between now and Sunday to placate Hayward and get him on the field?
Well, we know one thing. If a new deal isn't done by Sunday, it's not getting done.
He said that today.
Steelers have their rules.
And he mentioned that. You're right.
Rules are rules. Got to do it by Sunday or you're not going to do it. Here's the bottom line. Signed a new contract last year, committed through 2026, and I'm a big Cam Hayward fan. I have far less sympathy for guys who sign deals as veterans, who have options. He could have played out his contract last year, bet on himself, become an all-pro, and gone wherever he wanted to go. Stayed in Pittsburgh. Remember, he was talking about going to Cleveland as we went through the 2024 offseason. He got his deal, and by all appearances, the Steelers expect him to honor it. And look, I am pro player to the core. But at a certain point, you've put your name on a document, and that document commits you. And I think the Steelers believe that. So if he is healthy and doesn't play, he runs the risk of being found to have engaged in conduct detrimental to the team, for which he could be fined or suspended. And it's not good for the Steelers that this is happening. It's not good for Hayward. This situation's been misplayed by his camp. And at some point, his agents have responsibility here too. I hope they get it worked out. But if I were his agent or his brother, cousin, nephew, friend, anyone who was trying to help him, I'd say, tread lightly here, because they hold all the cards and you're getting paid under a contract you signed last year, and you may not like it, but you signed it and you knew that it could go this way. You'd grossly outperform it and they'd say, hey, you're under contract.
Mike, if you were his agent and you knew back in February that your client wanted more money for this season from the following season's contract, and you knew that that was his basic ask, I should be paid more, I played this well, how would you have tried to handle it to make it work for him in a way that the Steelers might have been more amenable to doing?
You got to start a line of conversation with the team immediately. The day that you find out he's made the All-Pro team, let's talk about this. He's outperformed his deal. We need to do something or we're going to have a problem here. I'm telling you now, I'm giving you fair notice. We need to work this out or we're going to have a problem. And then I would have a conversation with Cam about his options. You can stay away from the offseason program. You can skip the mandatory minicamp. How strongly do you want to send a message to the team? You could consider retirement if you wanted to. Now, he got a signing bonus last year, and if he'd retire, he'd have to pay back two-thirds of it. So that's a factor as well. So it's all about laying out the options for the client, door number one, door number two, door number three, door number whatever, and then telling him it's up to you. At some point, the client wants your advice, though. And if he were my client, I'd say, well, we've committed to this contract. And I would have made damn sure I talked to him last year about this very possibility. Cam, you know, if you make all pro, there's no guarantee they're going to give you a new contract. Maybe we need to build something into this contract that gives you an escalator for next year if you do make all pro. And remember I said a couple of weeks ago that when he said, I'll be back next year when I make all pro, and they giggled because they got his signature on the new contract without any of that in there. So they hold all the cards here. And it's unfortunate because the team usually holds the cards in all of these circumstances, but they handed them the cards last year when they took that contract that didn't protect him against having the kind of season he did.
Mike, one thing he did say today is that the two sides have been talking, and he made it sound like since he started, I don't know what his starting point is, February or the Holden, whatever, that he felt like progress had been made, but not enough progress. If he's being honest and truthful about that, that means the Steelers are at least willing to not just say, hey, there's 2 years left on the contract. We don't negotiate with players with 2 years left on the contract. So how would that nugget and that piece of information, if true, affect how you feel about where this maybe ends?
Well, it's another factor that you take into account when you decide whether to play or not play, because now it's not just risking the money you were due to make under your current deal. It's risking whatever they would be giving you if you take the enhanced deal, because that's what you're giving up now. So when I used to practice law, I would try to get, if I was representing an individual who was suing a company, an insurance company, whatever, and there was a settlement offer, I would want to get the best offer on the table before the trial begins so my client will know this is my bird in the hand and I'm making the decision whether I'm going to take that bird in the hand and put it in the bank or I'm going to throw it away and go try to get the two in the bush. So the goal is get the best offer on the table so Cam can make a decision by Sunday. But you don't want these distractions. There have been players who have signed those new contracts right up against the start of the season. Quentin Nelson, for example, when he got his deal with the Colts, it went right up until the start of the season. And he later said, my season was affected by the lack of focus I had getting ready for the season, worrying about whether or not I was going to get my contract. So this isn't good for anybody that we're at this point at this time.
Mike, what do you actually think happens in the end here? My gut feeling, I'll tell you where I stand. I think that they're going to eventually give him 4 or 5, whatever it is, million extra, but they are going to wait till the 11th hour, till the 59th minute, and use that as almost like a message. Hey, if we can do this to Cam Hayward and make him sweat and make him miserable, we can damn sure do it to any of the rest of you that might try this in the future.
Cam Hayward's been a great player for the team since he was a first-round pick in 2011. He's a great guy off the field, on the field, leader, future coach. I remember that game, he was on the sidelines, he had the headset on. It's like, man, that guy could be a hell of a coach. He just has that presence and that demeanor. But they have to ask themselves, how central is he at this age, at this skill level, to what the team is trying to do? If it's TJ Watt, you make exceptions. If it's TJ Watt, you do what you have to do, and you don't worry about the precedent, because if somebody else says, hey, you did that for TJ Watt, you say, you go play like TJ Watt, and we'll do it for you. Cam Hayward's not at that same level, and so it makes it harder to not have other players try to pull the same thing next year with their contracts. I think that's what I would be concerned about if I was the team. But this is all something that should have been done long ago, so everyone could be thinking about one thing and one thing only on a Friday afternoon at 3:40 p.m. Eastern time, the New York Jets, 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 and nothing else.
Well, that was going to lead me to my last question about this, which is, in your opinion, do the Steelers have any blood on their hands? Are they guilty of anything here? Are there missteps on their part? If there is criticism to be had regarding the Steelers, what is it?
Well, I think anytime you have a situation where a team thinks that it won a negotiation, the question is, what did you really win? If you got a guy to sign a deal that a year later doesn't look like a good deal for him, but looks like a good deal for you, are you creating a problem with a key player? And clearly you are. It can't be about winning negotiations. It has to be about winning football games. And when you have a distraction like this one right before the start of the season, that is not conducive to winning football games. These situations should be avoided. And the best teams, the best organizations avoid these situations. Whoever wins this tug of war, they both lose because the tug of war is happening.
Mike, what is your official Steelers 2025 win-loss record prediction?
Well, I mean, come on. This has become as cliched as Jeff Fisher 7-9 day, right? 8-9, 9-8. I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I don't. When you sit down to try to pick 7 out of 16 teams to make it to the postseason, there's a lot of great teams in the AFC. There's going to be a very good team or two or three that is on the outside looking in. And we don't know what's going to happen. Injuries will be a huge factor. Aaron Rodgers could rewind the clock to 2020, 2021 when he was the league MVP. Who knows? But when you look at the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, the Broncos, the Chargers, the Bengals, that's 6 spots right there. Oh, and somebody out of the AFC South is going to take one of those spots because that's how the conference is configured. The Texans or one of the other 3 teams. There's no room at the end potentially for a very good team. And that very good team, no matter how good the Steelers are, could be Pittsburgh outside looking in when it's all said and done.
Mike, but I have to press you because for Mike Tomlin's legacy, that difference between 8-9 and 9-8 is very important. So which one do you want to go with?
Oh, 9-8. Okay. 9-8. Yeah, 9-8. But
you're the first person we've had.
Everything they've done this offseason, DK Metcalf, Aaron Rodgers, Jalen Ramsey, it's about winning a playoff game.
Yep.
And if you don't make it to the playoffs, I don't know much. I know you can't win a playoff game if you don't make it to the playoffs.
Mike, we've had 25 insiders and analysts. You were the first one to pick 9-8. No joke.
Wow.
Mike, I have one more bonus question for you. Yes or no answer. I know you're a good friend. Pablo Torre just blew open another story in the NBA with Kawhi Leonard's eight-figure tree planting no-show job, something straight out of The Sopranos. Yes or no? Do you think things like that exist for NFL players as well?
You know, it's fitting because I've got my track suit. I'm ready to go sit outside Satrials and get some sun. Yes, it happens in the NFL. And in the aftermath of Pablo's reporting, because everybody thinks like Pablo and I are family members. And so people start texting me because they think I'm involved in all of this stuff with Pablo. It's like, I don't have anything to do with this NBA thing. I heard from somebody right away about a habit that may be done now, but 20 years or so ago, teams, at least one, probably more than one, in-house video company that would be used to pay players who weren't on the roster to keep them around so they'd be available when the team needed them.
That is great.
That happened with at least one team.
Never disappoints, Mike.
Mike, we'll talk again next week. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Forget about it.
Mike Flory, everybody, Pro Football Talk.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring Podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring Podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.